Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, got some music news for you from the latest edition of Rolling Stone magazine. How Elton rocked again. For his upcoming album, Elton John loosened up, bashed out songs that made that nod to his mid-70s classic. Elton John has spent the past few years making mostly reflective and piano-based albums like 2010's Leon Russell collaboration, The Union, and 2013's sparse, somber The Diving Board. But earlier this year, he decided to head in a radically different direction. I was in Honolulu playing a show with my band, and I said to my guitarist, Davey, go out and buy 12-string guitars. I want to hear lots of them on this record. We're going to make an up record. John asked longtime songwriting partner Bernie Taupin to come up with a batch of joyful, uplifting lyrics. I think he felt there's enough pain and suffering in the world without my contributing to it, says Taupin. I wanted to write things that were really hook-driven. It was an adventure we haven't investigated since the loud, brash pop of our mid-70s albums. Working with producer T-Bone Burnett in L.A., John, his touring band banged out 10 songs on Wonderful Crazy Night due February 5th in just 17 days. Sticking to his tradition, John entered the studio without so much as glancing at Taupin's lyrics or coming up with a single note of music. He would sit at the piano, read Taupin's words for the first time, and the melodies would come pouring out. It's just crazy to watch, says Burnett. It's the same improvisational courage that Dylan used for Highway 61 Revisited. The process is mysterious even to John. I haven't analyzed it, he said. I just think, well, that's the way it works. I'm very lucky when it all comes out. During the process, which takes about an hour or so per song, John's band is listening through headphones from the control room, preparing to flesh out the material. Most of the tunes on the LP were nailed within two or three takes. You can overcook the egg, John says. You can lose energy and adrenaline, and that's so important. Wonderful Crazy Night is full of euphoric love songs with a couple of notable exceptions. I've Got Two Wings tells the story of an elder Utah Smith, a musician preacher, who performed all over the South in the 1940s with a giant white wing strapped to his back. I'm a bookworm, Taupin said, and American musical history is my basic thing. A Good Heart is about raising young children. John has two kids, Elton and I are radically different characters, says Taupin, but one thing that ties us together is having young kids. We both understand the perils, pitfalls of raising, and joys of raising him. John and Taupin were thrilled with the finished product, but executives at Capitol Records didn't see the commercial potential. They refused to put it out and dropped John from the label. Capitol declined to comment for the story. I was gutted, I have to say, John says. I knew it was a fucking good record. He ended up signing with Island Records, which is enthused about the project. I can ask for no more, John says. I follow the charts and I know everything about this business. I'm not expecting to sell a million records. Taupin says that John fans simply want to hear their old favorites in concert rather than new LP. There's a nostalgia about our old work that can be debilitating. You can be Billy Joel and stop making records, but if you have that drive and passion, you're going to do it whether you sell or not. It's there inside of you, and if you don't get it out, you're going to explode. It's there inside of me, and if I don't get it out, I'm going to explode, Elton John says. Here's an article. Hard-driving 22-year-old pop phenom Charlie XCX is one of the brightest stars in the music business, and she's just getting started. The first three times I did mention it, but this point, it's worth bringing up. You know, you slapped me four times during this interview, I told Charlie XCX. No, I haven't, she protests, rolling her eyes. I start to recite the incidents back at her, counting on my fingers and then giving up after two. Both of us arrived here eager and drink, and once we've had more than I can count, the specifics have gotten blurry. It's 1 a.m. in Oslo city center, and we're in the Kulturhuset, a rowdy bar filled with Norwegian hipsters, their beards dangling perilously close to their pints of pale ale. Oh, whatever, they were more like face palms than anyway, she says. The next round arrives. Sam, her buddy from whom she's made her assistant, refreshes us every 20 minutes or so. Charlie's a British singer and a British drinker who became globally famous in the most American way imaginable, writing and singing the schoolbully hook of Iggy Azalea's Fancy. The video in which Charlie had a supporting role, scene-for-scene recreation of Valley Girl classic Clueless, an orgy of cheerleaders, house parties, and red cups. Since then, her videos have touched on other types of American youth cinema. She's been trashy messing a video for doing it, a prom-running alpha bitch and Break the Rules, and the world's gnarliest cheerleader in her latest video, Famous. She grew up wanting to be the bad kind of cheerleader, the one who smokes behind the bleachers. And now she's obsessed with the forgotten pop misfits of her youth, Avril Lavigne, Lay 2, Hillary Duff for Charlie, who Charlie says wrote the Billboard Top 10 hit Boom Clap, recording it herself before I was with Duff's people said it wasn't cool enough. In person, she's seeming devoid of ego. She's relentlessly honest and never breaks eye contact. If she wants something off the record, she doesn't go, hey, this is off the record. You have to swear on your life. If I put this in, I will literally hate you forever and ever. I will ruin your life. Do you swear? Promise. Not that she holds a lot back. An exchange about her respective hotel room habits shift easily to porn. It's not like I arrive in a new hotel room and immediately open RedTube, but I will if I need to. Nearly all of her studies involve big nights out and bodily functions. There's the feces she found in the floor of her Mexican hotel room, spent an hour photographing. The night she also got drunk with a member of Cutie Boy band 5 Seconds of Summer, she had to cancel her flight. The long hungover appearance on the live British TV, during which she kept a bucket under the table, the barf in, and napped on a sofa between segments. Just a few nights ago, she was out late and got straight on the bus to travel to the next stop on the Katy Perry tour, for which she's the opener. I woke up in the night and I was in the middle of a 17-hour ride. I was just like, I can't be bothered to go downstairs, so I picked up my designer handbag and I thought, let's just go for this. I threw up in it 3 times, which is not to say she's entirely reckless. She wisely declines the name of the luxury bag, explaining they just gifted it to me. This is her life, a series of extravagances and wince-inducing repercussions. But ask about her, the woman named Charlotte Emma Atchison, and the exuberance quickly fades. Charlotte repeatedly insists that she's a pessimist, a cynic, and she's always bored. She means it. I'm just not very good at being happy all the time. Hey, Charlie, know what you mean? I feel like an outsider because I'm not always trying to put my game face on. I don't even have a game face. Hey, me either. You could have fooled me. From all appearances, we're having a fun, joking, laughing, getting utterly plastered. But as the night goes on, I begin to get the sense that there's nothing. Charlie XCX, the 22-year-old with the world at her feet, fears more than genuine contentment. I'd never met Charlie before, but I used to see her around. When I was a teenager in London, a group of eager promoters managed briefly to circumvent the authorities and staged a series of wild bacchanals at the warehouse on the outskirts of the city. The so-called all-age parties, there was never anyone a day older than 18 there, were wild, out-of-the-control raves full of drugs and underage sex. Think Lord of the Flies, but with girls and cat of mine and nobody named Piggy. In between DJ sets, live performers would come on, including a memorable 15-year-old girl who was usually wearing three clashing vintage outfits and a hippie face paint with wild black hair. Her songs were about club kids who thought they were all that. In other words, her audience. Sample lyric, we've got our neons on and our glow sticks out, trying to fight it out and see who's more individual. That was Charlie. My parents would actually drop me off at the raves. I remember one time my mom came to pick me up at 5 a.m. and some guy threw up all over her shoes, but I loved it. I was like, Mom, when I grow up, I want to live in a warehouse. That era created the city's youngest celebrities. There were 14-year-olds on the cover of London fashion magazines, mostly just because they were such hardcore partiers. Charlie was part of the first generation of teenagers to start developing their own personal brands while still in homeroom. When she was 18, she attended the world's most exclusive art school, the Slade, but she hated having to explain her weird ideas and love of Britney Spears. She was a doer, not an analyzer. She focused on writing music for herself and for others. Charlie spent half an hour in a hotel room writing, I love it, but as soon as it was finished, she knew she didn't want it. She gave it to Icona Pop, and when the song blew up, Charlie, then 20, heard her vocal was still on the record. What followed was a series of internal industry wranglings that led to the soon-to-be global hit being released as Icona Pop featuring Charlie XCX. More hits followed. Now she is here at this bar, seemingly every bar promoting her album Sucker and apparently enjoying the spoils, but she insists otherwise. I'm not going to lie and say everything's amazing because sometimes it's really fucking tough. I'm not good at being a perfect picture perfect pop star, happy all the time. If I'm having a bad day, I can't pretend. I'm always a bit unhappy. Oh, tell it, Charlie. Tell it. Hold on. Got to get to the other side. But that's just me. I like dwelling in my sadness. Minutes later, though, she's telling about buying a house in the English countryside that she decked out like a Miami 70s porn pad with shag carpet walls and low backless sofas. So it's like having beds everywhere. Even her room on the tour bus has a ceiling mirror. I just don't know what to do with the contradiction, this star who seizes opportunities, who seems to indulge in success but keeps wanting to tell me that none of it makes her happy. I ask her to square the two. Just because I might be bored doesn't mean I have to look boring, she responds. I'd rather look fabulous, like I'm having a great time. There's nothing that says boss more than a belly chain and snakeskin trousers. My dad always used to encourage me to dress weird. Charlie pulls out her phone and shows me some pictures of her father dressed in 9 different patterns of tartan. I see the connection. Drinks keep coming. Our interview has disintegrated. At one point, she asks me what I think of the rock band Royal Blood and lets me babble on about how they're the death of music. A few minutes later, she introduced me to her friend Mike Kerr, Royal Blood singer bassist, who then revels in the awkwardness. I take this as my cue to leave. What's your number, Charlie says, before I go. Let's see how hungover we are tomorrow. If it's bad, you can come to my room and I'll show you how to order room service properly. Room service, she told me a few times already, is her greatest joy on the road. The next evening, Charlie is lighting up an arena of 20,000 Katy Perry fans. On stage, there's a giant red lollipop protruding from the rafters. Charlie's doing oi point fist pumps. At one point, she just collapses on the floor and keeps singing. She's a ball of raw energy and a joke to the tween girls who here with KP painted on their foreheads. By then, they squeal for a Charlie encore. I go backstage. Charlie is slumped on an IKEA couch, but she's joking around, nothing but sunshine. She fared better than I did this morning. She just boshed 2 Parmitols, as she says, and was up at 7 a.m. to see the solar eclipse, but got stuck in a hotel elevator and missed it. Now I've known her for a full 24 hours. I feel it's time to press her a bit. Charlie, maybe it's time to admit you're actually enjoying this and relax a little. But that's just who I am, she protests. I have a business mind. I have a real drive. I want to have a want. I have to have an empire. I want to have more of a legacy. And I think just because I wear what I wear and I'm a pop star doesn't mean I can't have that. I yank a memory out of last night's haze. She described herself as a control freak. Power gets me off. I always want more than I have. And now Charlie begins to make more sense. She doesn't dislike being a pop star. She's just afraid of what it represents. Being a pop star is like being the world's biggest marshmallow. You're soft and delicious and absolutely meaningless. A pop star is an unserious thing. That's why she's so keen to play up her downbeat side. It's her way of making clear that this role, no matter how well she inhabits it or so much joy it secretly brings, does not define her. Charlie is starting a publishing company and has begun managing other singers. She is also still a pop star, opening up for Katy Perry. But before I can propose my psychoanalysis, she starts telling me about the Grammys. She wants me to know how boring it was and how she couldn't get out of her seat because her scarf kept shedding, how she and Iggy didn't win. It was so dry, she drawls. Then she reconsiders. Although I didn't get to drive around all the day in my white Rolls Royce with my friend's puppy, dressed in a machino. Oh, and we did go to Sam Smith's after the party, and I spent 15 minutes with my tongue on its ice sculpture because I'd always wanted to get my tongue stuck on an ice sculpture. Then we rented a room at the Chateau Marmont. Story keeps going. I think what Charlie is trying to say, this is fun for now. Identical 23-year-old twins, Miranda and Electra Kilby, the airy pop duo Say Lulu, skipped out on college a few years ago to explore their musical leanings in London and Silver Lake. Known for their breathy vocals and polished grooves, the pair were weaned on rock. Mom Karn Jansen was in the punk band Pink Champagne. Dad is Steve Kilby of the Church. This spring they do their parents proud as their first album, Lucid Dreaming, drops stateside. We caught up with them in Stockholm on tour to talk art, fame, and freeing the female nipple. Just don't ask them which one's the naughty twin. Miranda. I was named after Miranda from The Tempest. It's the Latin word for worth admiring. It's not that I'm claiming it suits me. Electra, the name is less beautiful and more aggressive after the character in the Greek tragedy, Electra kills her mother. So it's quite a heavy name. Miranda had the sweeter name and perhaps the sweeter personality. We both have a lot of dark and light inside of us. We're kind of like a roller coaster, slightly bipolar. We can be quite nice or quite standoffish. People think we're colder than we are when they've only seen us in photos. I guess that's because our aesthetic is so stylized. But we're very chatty and we can be silly and hyper. And in the next second, yes, I suppose a bit reserved. Our creative relationship is 50-50. It's fantastic because we have each other. We know each other and we're really in sync, but we also get really annoyed with each other. In terms of the creative, we're very effective, but in terms of spending a lot of time on the road, it can get tough. We annoy each other. We have our own flats. Miranda has a lot of decorative porcelain cats, paintings, flowers, and stuff everywhere. I like keeping it more sparse. There's not stuff everywhere. It's just more colorful. Sydney and Stockholm, where we grew up, are so different in their mood and temperature. That's the kind of current that runs through our music. Australia is laid back and playful. Stockholm is more polished. A lot of perfect pop music comes out of Sweden, but we like to undercut it with something imperfect. Our parents are musicians, so we knew from a young age if we were going to pursue something cultural, it was going to be music. We listened to a lot of Kate Bush and David Bowie, and they kind of stuck with us. We had similar tastes our whole lives. There's always some sort of surrealism, dark side, a 70s decadence in what we like. We write songs, if they're upbeat lyrics, there's a melancholy feel to it. And if the song is more upbeat, we go a little bit off with the lyrics. We call it dream pop. I have a hard time explaining it any other way, but I would add noir at the end. It's ethereal pop. In terms of fashion, we see clothes more as a costume like a performance artist might. We've been sticking to the 70s as our inspiration. Everything seems possible then, from the free love to the female liberation. The era had something we won't have again. Our video, Games for Girls, captured some of that playing around in a carefree manner about the female body. It was commentary about needing to control who you are and your body, putting the control in the hands of women. If you want to be nude, you have the right to do it on your own terms. We aren't afraid to be political. It's feminist, but on a playful way. Like the social movement, free the nipple. Why should a woman's nipple be sexualized when a man's is not? There are so many misconceptions about female artists. Some people sometimes imagine that we couldn't possibly be doing everything on our own. Someone must be writing our music for us or calling the shots because behind the scenes. In reality, we've wrangled every single thing. The moments when we felt like, wow, we've made it, are the moments when we're on stage performing in front of a huge number of people. You slip into character, but we're very self-critical, and we haven't really had any moments of, this is it. We always want to get better. Kind of rough day. Had to take somebody to the hospital today and stay there with them all day and kind of run down a little bit. So I think I'll end the show a little bit early tonight. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, great night, wherever you are. See you next time. Bye.